You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to the Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast. It is Sunday, June 20th. Derek Van Riper here with Michael Beller. And of course, it is Father's Day. Happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there today, including you, Mr. Beller. Congratulations and hope you're enjoying your first Father's Day.
Yeah, thank you very much. I really got it in under the gun here 2 months ago, and celebrating the first Father's Day feels good. And what better way to start it off, right? Got some coffee. Got a water over here that I'm not going to just recklessly throw over my computer, and ready to talk some fantasy baseball.
Yeah, just going to calmly go through the waiver wire here. Everything's under control. Everything's good. Yeah. It's a funny week on the wire, by the way. It is a very hitter-heavy group. Mm-hmm. A lot of the pitchers are very fringy, and some of the streamers are total disasters waiting to happen. But we'll work our way through it. Of course, as always, the Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast is brought to you by Topps. Check out Topps Project 70, celebrating 70 years of Topps baseball cards. But I think the most interesting player was one that was called up midweek, and that's Jesus Sanchez for the Marlins. This is a pretty interesting guy because he cut down his strikeout rate during his time at AAA, debuted during the shortened season, didn't make much of an impact. The way the Marlins are built right now, it looks like Corey Dickerson's going to miss considerable time with a foot injury. He recently had an MRI. Don Mattingly said the results were not encouraging. So while we don't have an exact timetable, it really looks like Sanchez has every opportunity to secure his hold on everyday playing time, mostly in left field, but occasionally moving over to right field in this Marlins lineup.
And I think right there makes him someone who you're going after across the board. I think even down to 12-teamers, you can find a spot for Jesus Sanchez. And when I say that, I lean on that sort of phrase a lot. And when I say that, I don't mean that everyone in a 12-teamer can find a spot for him. There's going to be someone who's loaded in offense and doesn't need the help from Jesus Sanchez. But there's going to be someone in every 12-team league who can use this injection of offense and who should be taking a shot on the upside that Jesus Sanchez brings to the table. We saw him hit his first home run over the weekend. I believe that was just yesterday against the Cubs off of Rex Brothers. So that's one that comes off a lefty. You definitely like to see that. I mean, it really feels like this could be someone who takes off over the second half of the season. And as you said, the gains that we saw, the strides that we saw at the AAA level really hint at someone who is understanding what he needs to do to get better young in his career, just 23 years old. So I feel very good about Jesus Sanchez across the board.
Yeah, he popped 9 homers in 33 games at AAA before the promotion, hit .349 with a .400 OBP, a .174 WRC+. And he's not old for the level either. And he's kind of appropriately aged at this point. He's kind of young for the level everywhere he had played throughout most of his professional career. I would say he's at least a consideration in a 12-team league. I don't know if you go any more shallow than that, but if you're a 12-team league with 5 outfielders, guys that play every day and aren't just fillers on the wire are actually somewhat difficult to find this year because of all the injuries we have, all the mixing and matching that a lot of teams are doing. So I'm definitely in on Sanchez as probably the best all-around bat available in a wide swath of leagues this weekend. Let's talk about another hitter that I really like who really doesn't have a lot of opportunities to play, but he will have at least a temporary run in Houston. That's Abraham Toro. If you look back at his minor league numbers in 2019, really hasn't ever looked like he's been challenged in the upper levels of the minors. Alex Bregman is down with another leg injury and there's soft tissue problem for him. It could be a one-for-one swap. The only thing I'm worried about is that we saw Robel Garcia get the nod for the Astros at third base on Saturday. So not quite an everyday role for Toro, but certainly the door is open for him to claim a significant share of playing time in Bregman's absence.
And I think that's really what you got to bet on here, is that he shows himself much more deserving of at least being the more often starter than Robel Garcia. And I think he is going to be able to do that. As you said, hasn't really been challenged at the upper levels of the minors. It'll be good to see him get some consistent run at the majors, because we've seen him for, what, about 200 or so plate appearances, just doing the math in my head really quick. And it hasn't been great, right? He hasn't blown us away at the major league level. But we're still talking about a guy in his early 20s, 24 years old. There's definitely room to believe in him gaining and growing as he gets a regular spot in a major league lineup. And we know what a spot in this particular major league lineup means for people in the fantasy baseball world. Run scoring opportunities, RBI opportunities, really doesn't matter where you hit in Houston's lineup. You're going to have both of those fall at your feet. So I would love to see him get, you know, five starts a week. I'm not sure if that's going to be the case right off the bat, but I do think that we could see ourselves getting to that point so long as Alex Bregman is out. So definitely someone who I would go after. I would rather have Jesus Sanchez in a vacuum, but if he's someone, if I need to make a contingent bid, then Abraham Toro's probably the second guy who I'm going to on the wire this week.
Yeah, and I think Toro might be a little harder to get away with in a 12-team league. I think the playing time share is just a little bit smaller. It fits a little better in 14 and 15-team mixers. But a guy that I go at least a little over the min bid for sure, just because I think that minor league track record is going to lead to some major league results. You're just bidding on him really as a temporary solution for a couple of weeks. You're not expecting him to be a regular in Houston for the indefinite future, which I think is the case for Sanchez as long as he plays well enough to secure that spot. Let's get to Luis Urias. I'll talk Brewers anytime, but I think with Urias, I mean, there's a couple things that have made him appealing throughout this season. He's frequently available. He's corner middle eligible, second, third, short. So you can use him all over the place. And really, ever since Orlando Arcia was traded very early in the season, like early April, I think April 6th was the date of that trade, Urias has been steady. 238, so a little low on the batting average, but a 344 OBP. He's been walking pretty consistently all season. 432 slug, 8 homers. If you like runs and RBIs, he's actually providing a decent number of those too. 27 runs and 30 RBIs, 3 steals chipped in there as well. That's really not a bad player. I mean, it's a guy that approaches 20 homers and 10 steals over a full season. And with that OBP, you get decent counting stats to go along with it, since he's really locked himself in as a regular in the Brewers lineup.
It always, when you look at a profile like this, what jumps out at me is like, how is a guy like this not catching on in more leagues? It would just feel like he would. It just feel like, as you said, everything, he sort of does a little bit of everything. He's not going to carry your team, but he's going to be a net positive. You can live with the batting average, and the OBP is a positive if you are in an OBP league. It feels like there is a name brand attached to him that is dragging him down, and that's why he hasn't quite caught on in enough leagues. I think everything you said absolutely applies to Urias here, and someone who I would certainly be looking at. You love that multi-positional eligibility that he brings to the table.
How do you compare him to someone like Toro? Clearly, Urias is a bigger part of the Brewers' plans than Toro is with the Astros, so even though there might be slightly less per-game production, if things go really well for Toro, and that's a little bit of a stretch. I mean, it seems to me like you'd actually want to prioritize Urias more than Toro if you were looking for a Bregman replacement or trying to get some other sort of help on the infield.
I think you would have to. I think the only way in which you go with Toro over Urias is if you know this is a short-term ad for your team, and so you're just going to buy into, I would rather be invested in Houston's offense for 4.5 games a week than Milwaukee's for 6 games a week. I could see that argument. I don't know if I would actually pursue it myself, but that's the Toro over Urias argument.
Yeah, I think I'm on the side. I want the extra playing time in the case of Urias. So if you're thinking about fab bids, I mean, you don't have to go wild to get him. It's not like he's had this surge in the last couple of weeks where everyone's chasing him right now, but I'm just surprised. Week in and week out, there's a decent number of leagues where Urias is still out there. We got another versatile player to talk about, Luis Arraez in Minnesota. Yeah. Moving him around the infield as they always do. I've seen him make a couple starts at second base this week, playing some third base with Josh Donaldson banged up. I don't know if I can picture him in the lineup more than, like, if they're playing 6 games in a week. I don't know if he gets more than 4 starts in any given week, though. And there's still not a lot of game power there, even though, you know, the average and the OBP are clearly things that he's going to bring consistently. So, you know, if I'm looking at Arraez versus Urias, I think Arraez is a little more like Toro with playing time, like, pictures right now. And I think The problem I have with Arias is that it could just be a pretty empty good batting average.
Yeah, I think that's I do think that that's a concern for him, but I mean, like, he's been 2019, he was a 334 hitter, 399 OBP in 366 plate appearances. 2020, played about half of the shortened season, 321 batting average, 364 OBP. This year, he's at a 276 batting average, a 358 OBP. Like, I don't know, man. I want to bet on him getting more playing time than that. I just feel like he gets on base too much for this team to ignore him. And I realize that I'm, you know, sort of betting on, you know, some, having some sort of like faith and evidence of things not seen in terms of the playing time. But with all of that on base ability that he has, and with this team, you know, effectively out of the race, like, I don't know if they can really afford to just have a guy like this on their bench two times a week, with all the injuries they've had too, all the injuries they have in the outfield, even though they're getting some of these guys back. Like, I just feel like this, that Arias should be someone who is playing mostly every day for them. Now, me feeling that and Rocco Baldelli doing that are obviously two very different things, but there's just a lot of bat-to-ball skills here, and there's a lot of on-base skills here, and I think that he is going to get into the lineup. That's going to force him into the lineup more often than not. We were talking about him as a regular everyday player earlier this season before he went on the IL, so I still think that that could be in the cards for him. We could also be looking at a team that is going to be sending players out at the deadline, and if he is someone who is still there, then maybe that picks up the playing time for him organically. There are some ways here where I think we are eventually talking about Luis Arias as an everyday player, so I'm okay paying the playing time tax right now and getting him at a cheaper FAB number, thinking that he will eventually become an everyday player for this team again.
Yeah, and I think in leagues where you have multiple lineup swaps per week, whether that's the NFBC where you can change out the hitters on Monday and Friday, or even like a daily moves league where you just need someone who's versatile, you can plug in when other guys have days off or hurt, he does bring a lot of value in those formats, because at least you're helping your counting stats on days when you otherwise wouldn't have someone to play. And I think you're also right to point out that the Twins are almost certain sellers at the deadline. All it takes is one regular out of the lineup, be a trade, and suddenly he has a spot to basically call his own. And if that happens, everyone's going to be looking for that late season batting average lift, and he's going to be a very popular pickup. And I think in the meantime, he does play enough where you can justify to make that move. But much like Luis Urias, I don't think we're talking about a guy that's going to take that much of a bid, even though what he's been doing has been happening pretty consistently now for well over a year. Lots of infielders this week, though. Let's get to Christian Arroyo. And at one point in time, he was a pretty highly regarded prospect in the Giants system. Getting an opportunity to play a lot in Boston, occasionally moves up and hits at the top of the order as well. This is a Nando DeFino guy through and through. Do you think this is a real late bloomer situation where Arroyo might actually be a guy that looks like a short-term pickup who actually hangs around on our rosters deep into the second half of the season?
So, all apologies to Nando, and happy Father's Day to you, Nando, if you happen to catch this. I don't think this is going to be too legit. We're talking about a guy who is striking out more than ever, pushing up toward 30% of his strikeout rate. He's walked in just 3.7% of his plate appearances. He has not shown a great grasp of the strike zone and where it actually is. You love the playing time. And so long as he is getting that playing time, you can definitely ride him. He feels a lot more like a short-term sort of guy, like a, I just lost Alex Bregman, I need to pick up an infielder, I'll ride Christian Arroyo because he's playing every day in a hot offense. To me, that's the Christian Arroyo argument, not this is the sort of player he's going to be, you know, for the rest of the season, hitting, giving us a 260, 265 average, hitting for a decent amount of power, four homers and 135 plate appearances. I just don't see that really being the case for Christian Arroyo for the long term here. So if you can get him as a couple of week ad, I can get on board with that. But even there are some guys who we've already talked about here who I would be more interested in that, even with having the limited playing time. I think I would rather have a handful of Abraham Toro starts than a full week of Christian Arroyo. I think I'd rather have a handful of Luis Arias starts than a full week of Christian Arroyo. I just don't buy this as being a long-term thing for him.
I just have a problem with the playing time really kind of being maxed out right now, and I almost wonder if it only takes a couple of rough games, a bad week, before he's back into like a half share of playing time as opposed to getting 85-90% like he has been in recent weeks. So I think I'm comfortable bidding on him in a 15-team mixed league, and if I'm stacking up all these infielders, he's probably a min bid sort of guy as a contingency option, not necessarily somebody that I'm aggressively pursuing right now. Let's get to Taylor Ward. who I think is pretty interesting, only because Joe Adell still has a 31.8% strikeout rate at AAA, even though he's hit 16 homers in 36 games there. That was entering play on Saturday. Ridiculous power output. But I think if the Angels are going to confidently bring up Joe Adell and try and keep him in the big league lineup, they need to see that K rate come down at least into the low or mid 20% range. In the meantime, Ward is hitting. He's got a 123 WRC plus through his first 41 games this season. It's a 256, 338, 466 line, seven homers, good run production. I'm starting to wonder, is he actually a little bit good? He's a former first round pick, kind of like Christian Arroyo, a prospect of 4 or 5 years ago that had a lot more luster than he's had more recently. And even was pretty good in 2019. I know it was the rabbit ball year at AAA, but with context, Taylor Ward was one of the better hitters in the PCL that year when everybody was mashing.
Yeah, I think he is a little bit good, Derek. I think that's the right way to think about it right now. All the StatCast numbers look good. I mean, there's a lot of red ink when you look at the StatCast page. You can live with the 30% strikeout rate that he's putting up, the career number. He's got down at 25. You can certainly live with that, with all the power numbers that he's putting up. He's walking about 9% of the time. So really everything is checked off here. I mean, everything that you would look for from a player making some sort of, I don't know, if a leap maybe feels like a little bit aggressive of a word, but asserting himself as a legitimate everyday player, I think Taylor Ward is doing everything that we would ask for a guy like that. And the Joe Adell problem becomes interesting. It also becomes a little bit confusing when you look at where this team is in the standings, and they're like a classic in-between team right now. Could we make a push for an AL wildcard spot? Maybe, especially if they get Mike Trout back right around the All-Star break, but how many things would have to go their way to land a wildcard spot? And when you look at the three teams in the AL East, when you look at the A's and the Astros, when you look at the White Sox, maybe can potentially run away with the Central, but there are those Cleveland Indians yet again putting together an unbelievable season when they have no business doing so. Terry Francona, AL Manager of the Year. I don't think that should even be a question at this stage of the game. I mean, you see all those things and you think this team maybe is going to be sellers. And I just think that all adds up to Taylor Ward finding his way into the lineup one way or another. So yes, I am in on Taylor Ward. No doubt about it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm interested too. I think he pushes at least a 5% bid in a lot of mixed leagues. I'd go a little lighter maybe in a 12 team league, but I think he's even rosterable there given the share of playing time that he has. And that's even with the risk. If Adell gets the K rate down for a few weeks, then they may see something in there where that's an upgrade, and they might have to pull that string to try and stay in the wild card race. But you named four teams that are pretty clearly ahead of them right now in that race. And without Trout, especially, I think they're kind of long shots to close that gap anytime soon. They could be one of the best teams in the league in the second half if things break their way. But that's going to require Trout getting healthy before it's even a possibility.
They would have to play like 620 ball over the second half of the season to really get into it.
Hard to imagine that team pulling that off given their recent history. But they do have a catcher who's been mashing. Yes, Max Stassi. I know in two catcher leagues he's long gone. I guess I wanted to put him on our rundown today because I wanted to ask you, in leagues that only use one catcher, which is a good number of leagues out there,
the best leagues,
is he a top 10 sort of player at the position right now based on what he's done going back to the shortened season?
I think he is, and so I love one catcher leagues, and my home league is a one catcher league. It's a 14 team league, and here's what I look for in one catcher leagues. And maybe I'm not splitting the atom, maybe I'm not doing anything new here, but what I look for in one catcher leagues, or for my second catcher in a two catcher league, is just do something reliable, right? That's all I really want out of that catcher. Do something reliable. Don't kill me in my rate stats, and I'm cool. And Max Stassi is absolutely doing that. So I think he is that sort of player. I think he's an easy guy to go after if he is still available in your one-catcher league. I don't think there's any question that you're going to want him, and I don't think there's any question that he's going to stick around for the rest of the season. That power is legit. This Angels offense is only going to get better as Mike Trout gets back into it. Anthony Rendon, you know, dealing with an injury, but that's still a very good on-paper offense, and so there's going to be run-scoring opportunities, RBI opportunities, very consistently for him. I think absolutely Max Stassi is looking like a top 10 catcher the rest of the way.
Yeah, I'm in. So if you're in a shallow league and he is still out there, there's a decent chance that he's actually an upgrade for you at the position. Playing time share looks good. Per game production looks outstanding for him. A bit of a late bloomer. That happens a lot, though, at the catcher position. I was looking through playing time just for the season, and Miles Straw plays a lot. I didn't like him when he was trending up at the end of draft season because I don't really think the skills are standout, but 8 steals so far this season, plays almost every day, and it's a good Houston lineup, a really good Houston lineup, actually the best in the league in terms of WRC+. So even with Alex Bregman on the shelf for a couple of weeks, this is still an Astros lineup that can put plenty of runs on the board. So hitting in the bottom third of their lineup isn't necessarily the worst thing in the world. You can still put up pretty good counting stats from that spot. I don't really see an immediate threat to his hold on that playing time share, Beller, and cheap speed is hard to find. So I think if you're sitting in a league where Straw is still out there and you need to make up a little bit of ground in the stolen base category, I'm comfortable going after Miles Straw to do it.
You should rewrite Tom Petty, You Got Lucky, Babe, and instead of good love is hard to find, it's cheap speed is hard to find, right? That'd be great. It'd be a great little rewrite there and an homage to Tom Petty. Look, what I like about Miles Straw as an analyst is that he's very simple to talk about. You know he's going to steal bases, as you said, even in the bottom third of that order. He's going to have counting stat upside. So if that is attractive to you, understanding that he is going to hurt your rate categories no matter what you use, he's someone you should go after. If you need to prioritize the rate categories, if you can't take on a potential batting average sinkhole, then you got to take a pass on him. It's very binary with Miles Straw.
Yeah, he is a very easy player to analyze at this point. I don't think we're going to get power. I don't think anything's going to change, but does get on base enough to hold that job and gives them a viable defensive center fielder. Good center, center fielder. That matters. That's the kind of thing the Astros need. They got plenty
matters
of guys that can
hit. For a contender,
hit.
For sure.
Mm-hmm. Let's get to Lamont Wade Jr., a regular on this show. Is it 3 weeks in a row now? It's at least two in
so.
A row
at least two.
For Wade. Yeah. I see him as more of a big side platoon guy with all the shuffling that they can do in San Francisco. But I think his hold on the share of playing time in left field is actually pretty firm as long as Alex Dickerson's out.
Mm-hmm. I think it would have gone away by now if it wasn't good. If it was going to go away, it would have gone away. So now that we have cleared that hurdle, and this has been weeks now. I mean, you said we've had him on the show 2 weeks in a row, and we weren't talking about him right away. This has been more than a month at this point that he has had that share of playing time. So I think that is locked in. That is absolutely safe. And so now we can treat Lamont Wade as what his FanGraphs, StatCast, whatever, choose your provider's page says he is. And his page says that this is someone who should be owned in all 15-team leagues. Definitely 15-team, maybe even down to 14-team, 5-outfielder. This is someone who belongs on a roster. He's hit his way there. He leads off for this team when he does play. And like it or not, this team's hitting. This team's scoring runs. This team is hitting for power. There's a lot of run scoring upside atop the Giants lineup. And that is the one category that feels like it gets lost in the shuffle. We're always looking for power. We're always looking for speed. We're always trying to get our rates going. And people just sort of assume that the runs will come. But sometimes you need to attack the run category itself. And Lamont Wade Jr. is someone who provides that with his spot atop this Giants lineup, a Giants lineup that has been a whole lot better than any of us thought it was going to be.
Yeah, and if he hasn't been added already, you don't have to go overboard now either to get him because you do have the lingering potential return of Alex Dickerson. Dickerson is starting a rehab assignment, so he could be back maybe within a week. And if that happens, then I do think Wade gets a slight dip in playing time. But they're going to have to be careful with Dickerson. He's had plenty of back injuries in his career, and I think just getting him in the lineup consistently enough to keep him healthy, but also reap the benefits of the power that Dickerson brings is important. And Wade can sort of help ease that workload just a little bit. We've seen him move around and play some other positions too. So I'm kind of curious to see, with Dickerson potentially back in the fold, is there somewhere else that Wade might fit in this lineup for the Giants? One more hitter to get to. Steven Souza is up right now with the Dodgers. Part of me is just interested because the Dodgers were interested enough to make him a depth guy. What a smart team. Adds a player like this, stashes him away, it gives him an opportunity. That makes me think there's something good somewhere in those underlying numbers. And I think with Souza, injuries were a big part of the story for him 2 years ago now in Arizona. And he's a low average, decent OBP, big power guy. If you look at barrel rates, he's pretty consistently good in the barrel rate department. You get Cody Bellinger on the IL. Betts is playing center field right now. Zach McKinstry appears to be playing a little less. What sort of playing time share do you think we have for Souza? Is it enough to push him in for deeper mixed leagues, or do you see him as more of an NL-only stopgap?
I think it's enough to push him in at a min bid for deeper mixed leagues. Absolutely min bid between his injuries and the way this team can mix and match parts. I just don't see there being enough playing time to want to get in any sort of legitimate resources to get him on my team. It's a little bit too risky, even with Cody Bellinger being on the IL for a little bit here now. I just don't see it. I don't see enough playing time. McKinstry, Pollock, Betts, the way that they work all these other guys into their lineup. I mean, they still want to get time for Albert Pujols into this lineup and what that does downstream with the rest of this team. I just don't see enough playing time here to do anything more than a min bid in mixed leagues, and definitely an easy NL-only stopgap for sure.
Yeah, love him for NL-only. I would agree. If you're going to bid on him in a 15-team mixed league, he's probably the last outfielder you have out there. Yeah. Just hoping that he gets a little extra playing time.
I mean, I'm talking $0. If your league allows a $0 bid, I would put a $0 bid on Steven Souza.
Hey, people have made $0 bids on worse players than Steven Souza. So yeah. I think if you're in that position, that's really, really not that bad.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
All right, Beller, I kind of teased this up top. The pitching is not great this week. It could be worse. We've seen worse.
We've seen worse, yeah. That's true.
At least there's a top prospect that came up. And Matt Manning is that prospect. He's got a home start against the Cardinals for his second big league turn. I'm a little bit skeptical because when you look at Matt Manning's AAA numbers, his home run rate was 3.06, his home run rate, not his ERA, his home run rate. And yeah. If you have a home run problem like that at AAA, it's sort of like having a pronounced strikeout problem as a hitter. It seems pretty likely that that's going to be an issue, at least in the short term for you at the big league level. So I'm trying not to go overboard with Matt Manning. I think if I'm desperate for pitching, he's definitely on the radar. I think in deeper mixed leagues, you can think about him. What are your thresholds for the types of leagues where you want to bid on him, and how aggressive do you want to be given that one skills flaw? Because the other skills actually looked pretty good at Toledo. I just think an extreme home run rate is not going to translate very well with the move up a level.
Yeah, deep mixed leagues is where I'm focused on him. I would go after him in a 15-teamer, but not aggressively. Maybe a slightly more than a min bid here. I'm just worried about that, exactly what you said. And I mean, I think he could strike out enough guys to contribute in that category. But again, like, what's he going to be working on at the major league level? What is the team going to consider a successful season for Matt Manning? What will it take for them to send him back down? Because I think that is obviously a non-zero chance of that happening. So when you put all those factors into it, it's got to be a pretty low bid for him. You also have to consider the fact that there's just not a ton of win upside for him. So that's a category where you can't really count on him as a major contributor, almost no matter how he pitches. Obviously, he has a little bit of influence over that. But roll it all up, and it's slightly more than a min bid for me, and more just a wait and see. I will definitely let someone beat me to Matt Manning.
Yeah, I think for me, even on a team, again, we're not talking about keeper in Dynasty where there's a lot more appeal and he's probably rostered already. But I think I'm capping that bid somewhere around 5%. And maybe it's because we've learned a lot about the difficulties of young pitchers adjusting to the big league so far this season anyway. It's been a really tough road for a lot of young pitchers. I also don't think we're talking about a guy who necessarily breaks the stuff metrics quite the same way that Shane McClanahan did upon arrival, or even the way that Alek Manoah did. I think there is a very bright long-term future, but I think there are going to be initially more starts where you want to sit him than start him, barring some pretty unforeseen growth from Manning in the final stages of his development. So I'm going to be careful. 4-5% is probably my target bid. Outside of 15-team leagues, I think he's more of like a 1-2% guy despite the prospect pedigree. I just want to avoid the possibility of getting shelled. And moreover, I just look at this Tigers team as like a bad team. Wins are going to be hard for him to come by. So it's not like you're absorbing a 450 ERA and a 135 whip, but you have a high win probability most days. I don't mind this matchup in particular. I think you could also think of him as more of a shallow league streamer for this turn if you have the discipline to be able to drop him as soon as you don't like the matchups and you need that roster spot again. Let's move over to Jake Odorizzi. This is a nice week for him at Baltimore, at Detroit, and it seems like he's starting to trend back in the right direction after a miserable start. They did do a tandem start with him behind Lance McCullers through four scoreless innings against the Rangers in that appearance. I think he can go five in both of these starts, given these matchups and given that he's gone five a couple times already this year. He's out there in about 50% of 12-team mixed leagues. That's at the NFBC, so I think in some of more casual formats, he might even be more widely available. And I think there's actually a chance that you're going to want to hold on to Odorizzi, because we were talking about Houston earlier. This offense scores plenty of runs, and I think that at the opposite end of what I just said about Matt Manning, if Odorizzi's ratios disappoint you, as long as he's getting you volume, you're probably getting Ks, and you got a pretty high probability of getting some wins.
Yeah, I think this is definitely a pretty easy add to make this week, whether it's just for this week or whether it goes beyond this week. Big time win upside in both of these matchups. Obviously, that goes without saying when you get Houston against a couple of the league's bottom feeders. You love to see that for this entire team and certainly for Jake Odorizzi. And then with the small gains that we've seen in the recent term, feels like he should be someone who maybe is increasing. And I don't know if, you know, we know that this Houston team is going to play around with its rotation a little bit. I don't think we've seen the last of Christian Javier as a starter this season. I don't know if Odorizzi is the guy who necessarily loses in that. Maybe he is, maybe he isn't. It's hard to say with where he is in his career. It feels a little bit less likely for him. But either way, there's a lot to like about him this week and into the future. So I think Odorizzi probably, as you said, a weak week for starting pitching, probably the number one guy who I'm going after if I need help with the position.
Yeah, I think I said 4-5% in leagues where I'm pitching desperate for Manning. I would actually make a comparable bid on Odorizzi, and you might be able to get him for less. It really depends on your budget situation and your level of need. But I think I could see him actually exceeding some expectations because of how bad the start of his season was. Projections loved him coming into the season too. And I think we underestimate sometimes how favorable pitching in Houston actually is too. There's a nice bump there for strikeouts. I don't know if it's the batter's eye, the lighting, what it is in there. It's one of those parks that actually boosts up strikeouts, and it plays pretty pitcher friendly overall as well. I want to talk about Patrick Sandoval again for just a moment. The matchup this week at Tampa Bay, it's not like you're picking him up because of that matchup, but I think he's just a lot better than a lot of the pitchers that are out there in your typical 12 or 14 team mixed league.
I think you're right about that. I think you could, if you're in a league that lets you pick a guy up and you don't have to play him right away, you could think about that with this matchup against Tampa. But he does feel like a guy who is 15-team relevant. I don't know if you go beyond that. I don't know if I would even say 14-team relevant to the point where you're sticking him on a roster and letting him sit there. But I think he's a 15-team mixed league relevant guy. So not many guys we're going to say that about this week, as you'll see as we go on and on in this show. There's not going to be too many guys that we feel that way about who can stick on a 15-team league mixed roster for a couple of weeks here. Sandoval is one of those guys. So if you are someone who needs long-term pitching help, not just a start or two this week, Sandoval is one of the few guys who can answer that for you with consistency across the fantasy baseball landscape this weekend.
How about these Marlins? Get to each of these guys.
How about them?
Cody Poteet is back from the IL. I believe the last start he just made was against the Cubs. Didn't even go four innings in that start, but he's going to be home against the Nationals. Pretty interesting results from him in the upper levels of the minor leagues at times. I think there's actually a useful sort of back-end starter here. Command was really lacking, though, in that first start off the IL. So I'm just curious, what is your interest level in Poteet? Because I put him outside of our streaming group since this matchup isn't necessarily a streaming matchup, but I'm always interested in Marlins at home, and I think there could be a little more long-term appeal here if you're looking for someone to pick up cheaply and possibly roster for more than this week.
There's some. I'm surprised that he's been able to strike out almost a batter per inning so far in the majors, and we're talking 27, 28 innings, so it's not like it's a huge sample. But that was never something we saw from him at the minor league level. You have to go back to high A to, what was that, 25 innings of high A ball in 2018 before you find a strikeout per inning number for him in his minor league career. So you can't really expect that. I don't know. I'm not super excited about him as someone who is going to be anything more than a streamer in good matchups. I think that this is not a bad one. I think he could be in that discussion this week, but it's hard for me to really want to get on board with him because the strikeouts just aren't going to be there. And this Marlins team, a little pluckier than they get credit for, but still not a great team. Much of that pluckiness is based on the fact that the other pitchers, the non-Poteet pitchers in the rotation, are very good. I mean, this team is built to contend in the not-too-distant future. I don't know how big of a factor Poteet is in that other than maybe being a fifth starter.
Yeah, fifth starter seems like a pretty fair place to set the expectations for him. He's got a teammate, Zach Thompson, who is definitely a late bloomer, 27-year-old rookie. 5 scoreless with 7 Ks last time out against Atlanta. Similar situation to Poteet for you, or is there something different about Thompson that would make you more interested?
Similar situation, maybe something a little different. He starts today. I want to say he's taking the ball again this afternoon against the Cubs, so we'll see how he does in that start. I think there's maybe a tiny bit more strikeout upside to Thompson than there is with Poteet, but I think largely the same position for me.
All right, we've got a question here from Alfonso. This is for today, so it's not a waiver question. I have one starting pitcher to start today. Castillo or Gonsolin need help to pick? I mean, all right, Luis Castillo, I think, has started to earn back a lot of trust. I have a very difficult time sitting him, even though it's a tough matchup in theory going up against the Padres. By the way, Joey Votto getting tossed from that game last night in the top of the first inning. Like, what on earth was said to him that caused him to just completely lose it? I mean, it was a clear check swing strike three situation. They appealed. I still want to know more about that story. I hope Trent Rosecrans has a story for us on that today. But Castillo versus Gonsolin for Sunday. Who do you like, Beller?
Castillo has earned back a lot of trust here. I think I lean in his direction as well. It's one of those hard decisions to make because I want to play both of these guys. I feel pretty good about Gonsolin pretty much every time he takes the ball too, but I think with the strikeout ability that Castillo brings to the mound every time he takes the ball, he would be my guy here, even knowing we're getting a tough Padres lineup. And when Fernando Tatis Jr. left that game early last night, so maybe it's a Padres lineup that doesn't have its best hitter. So that's definitely a bonus for Castillo.
Yeah, and even with Tatis in there for most of this season, they've been a below-average offense as a whole. I mean, Trent Grisham has been great. You look at a lot of the secondary guys like Hosmer and Myers. Those guys all have taken a step back. Jurickson and Profar has been
Cronenworth.
Brutal. Cronenworth's been pretty solid, but it just hasn't been the Slam Diego lineup that we last saw in the postseason last year. And I think, especially in San Diego, it's a pitcher-friendly environment, I'm a little more comfortable with most pitchers than I thought I would be at this point in the season. But I do think Castillo would have been the kind of guy that I trusted in tough matchups at the beginning of the year. He lost that trust temporarily. I think he's earned that back based on what he's been able to do here in his last 4 starts or so. All right, Beller, we are back for some streamers here. And here he is again, John Lester. If you didn't pick him up for that 2-step that we talked about last week, if no one went out there and got him, he's got another pretty good spot on the road in that Nats series in Miami. So given the lack of alternatives, if you're looking for someone to start this week, is Lester actually a viable streamer?
I think he is, given the lack of alternatives. The win upside's there. It's a good park to pitch in. Miami's offense, notwithstanding what they're showing in Chicago this weekend, not one to really fear. All the boxes are checked. He's not going to strike dudes out. He's walking a few too many guys for my taste this season, but definitely not a bad guy to go after, knowing that this could be a start where he goes 5 innings, gives you 4 Ks, and gets a win.
By the way, if you're enjoying this stream live, or if you listen to this podcast with your kids today, have them earmuff it. We're going to talk about Chris Flexen now, and it's not good. I mean, I don't think Chris Flexen is a good pitcher really at all. I am interested mostly because, as Al pointed out on Fantasy Baseball in 15, he's home against the Rockies. The Rockies have the league's worst offense. If you can't play Chris Flexen in that spot, you really can't ever play Chris Flexen in fantasy baseball anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think you can't play Chris Flexen. So that means you have to be able to play him in this spot. I mean, this is a spot where you want any Seattle pitcher who's going to be starting in this series. You want them. Great place to pitch. Love going up against this lineup. Chris Flexen, no doubt about it. He is someone who, even if we go back, if we reach back to the pitchers we were talking about as something more than streamers, since so many of them were guys who were just barely over that line, I would maybe rather have Flexen for just this week than a shot at, I don't know, Patrick Sandoval for the next month. I don't know if that's necessarily true. It would depend on what my pitching needs are. But I think that this is such a great start that he deserves to be thought of with those guys because he is, I think, easily the best streamer that we have available this week.
It's so disgusting to say that, though, when you look at the underlying skills. And I say that knowing who's next on the rundown. With all due respect to Brad Keller, he's on the road against the Rangers. This is a bad Rangers offense, or at least a bad enough Rangers offense where you could throw non-top 100 starting pitchers against them sometimes and get away with it. I mean, I think that's probably about where Keller would be, somewhere in the 100 to 120 range. He's been awful for the most part this season. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot like the Flexen situation. I kind of feel like if you're bidding on Flexen, throwing in a low bid on him, Brad Keller's probably sitting there with a 0 or 1 next to his name somewhere on that list.
Exactly. He's a little bit worse than Flexen in my eyes, and the matchup is a little bit worse than what Flexen gets in my eyes. So where I am maybe going to go 1%, 1.5% on Flexen, it's a min bid. It's a $0, maybe a dollar bid on Keller as a contingent in case I don't get Flexen.
It actually hurts for me to talk about pitchers that are this bad and this uninspiring. But here's our next one. Kyle Freeland,
here we go.
Also part of that Rockies-Mariners series. But on the other side, Freeland hasn't had good results so far this year. He's only had a handful of starts because of a stint on the IL. But Seattle's offense isn't much to write home about either. So is Freeland at the bottom of this list along with Keller?
I mean, again, we have to like start ranking these guys, right? I hate to like keep saying the exact same things, and we've got one more guy who's going to fall into the exact same pot here. I do think that's what we're looking at. We're looking at bad pitchers with great matchups who deserve to be streamed. So how do we rank them? For me, it's Flexen 1. I probably would go with Freeland over Keller. Keller's just been so bad this season.
I don't have a strong lean on that. If I'm just telling you what I'm going to put in my queue, it's probably Freeland over Keller as well, but there's not a lot of conviction there. And I think the next guy we're going to bring in here, Antonio Senzatella, I think he might be the best pitcher of the three, but he's got the slightly more difficult matchup facing a better, at least a trending upward sort of Brewers lineup that is also in a hitter-friendly environment. I think that's the other thing that works against Senzatella, but I think he's the best pitcher, probably of the five we've talked about here. I think he's better than John Lester. He just has to deal with Colorado. And because of that, we don't roster him very often. But at the very least, I'd go Lester, Senzatella, and then Flexen, Freeland, Keller if I'm looking for really cheap innings this week.
That's exactly what I was going to say too. I thought I was going to be really cool by saying Senzatella was my number two guy out of all these guys. But when we get to pitchers of this ability, I want to see the ability. Like I know that we're banking mostly on matchup here, but if you are still a legitimate pitcher, if you can still go and get dudes out and you're not totally banking on the matchup, then I like you better than someone who is banking almost entirely on the matchup. And with Flexen, Freeland, and Keller, I think that's what we're doing here. We're just making a matchup play, and we barely care about the name that is opposing that lineup. Senzatella is a little bit better than that. So even though he does have to go to AmFam Field and face a Milwaukee lineup that is trending up, he's the better pitcher than those guys. So I'll take my chances against the better lineup in the worst spot, because I think Senzatella is just a flat-out better player than Flexen, Keller, and Freeland.
Yeah, I think it was good we had the kids' ear muffet there, too, for AmFam Field. What an atrocity of a name. I mean, there's worse ones, but it will always be Miller Park to me. I will always stick with the
Miller
original
Park didn't feel
corporate
like,
sponsor.
It didn't feel like, exactly, right? Miller Park didn't, I mean, of course it's a corporate sponsor, but it didn't feel like a corporate sponsor. It just felt like someone's name because, you know, it is someone's name. Frederick Miller, what up? Now, like, you know, AmFam Field. Come on.
Of all the dumb things that I ever get mad about, it's pretty high on the list. Like I really don't like that at all. Move on to our really only intriguing reliever available in a lot of leagues because he just came back from the IL. It's Michael Fulmer. The first outing back was a save. It was not pretty, but I do think the Tigers have a pretty clear interest in giving him a lot of high leverage spots because he almost certainly will be added to a contending team's bullpen between now and the July 30th trade deadline.
100%. I mean, he's going to be saving games. They need to display their wares over these next 6 weeks here, and Michael Fulmer is one of the wares they have that could really net them something. I mean, there's going to be contending teams that need bullpen help. There's going to be a fair amount of arms out there. Michael Fulmer needs to show off for the Tigers and get himself onto a contending team. And what that means is he's going to be in those high leverage situations. He's going to be getting those save opportunities. This is not a great week to be hunting for saves on the wire. Fulmer, absolutely, I think, the best guy who's out there. So definitely go get him if you can. He is going to be getting save opportunities for this team. I think we can say that without question from now until the moment he's wearing another jersey.
Yeah, pretty much. Otherwise, you're looking at guys that are just partial closers. A lot of teams leaning more heavily on committees. I think we saw Tyler Duffy get a save earlier this week for the Twins. We've seen Hansel Robles get saves. We've seen Taylor Rogers get a lot of saves. You know, Pete Fairbanks getting some saves for the Rays. Like, those are things we've sort of expected. So if you're looking for someone who's more than a partial closer, or at least getting a larger share of the saves relative to the other options available, I think Fulmer is the only option there. The other situation that looks pretty bumpy right now is in Colorado. Daniel Bard had another blown save over the weekend against the Brewers. I think the problem I always run into in Colorado is not wanting to subject myself to the possible ratios destruction that comes from their relievers. Carlos Estevez seems to be the most likely replacement, but this is kind of like when we were talking about Cesar Valdez at the very beginning of the season, where it was like, he's the guy for now, and I don't know how long I'm going to roster him, so I'm going to go 1-2% if I'm chasing saves and hope that I get a few saves and ratios end up being okay. But I'm also not expecting start to finish new closer by picking him up either.
Agreed completely. And another thing that goes along with what you say about the potential rate bombs that get dropped on you with a Colorado pitcher, with a Colorado reliever, is that by their nature, when we're talking about this particular Colorado bullpen, we're talking about bad pitchers. Like, so the rate risk is even higher than if they, I mean, it was high enough for like Wade Davis when Wade Davis was a really good reliever for the Rockies. It was a high enough rate risk for him. So now we're talking about guys who are maybe going to be taking over for Daniel Bard, who has been largely ineffective this season. It becomes even higher. So I just personally, I would have to be absolutely 100% desperate for saves to chase it. And if you're desperate for saves to be chasing someone like Carlos Estevez, you're probably out of the category to begin with. Like, you're probably not going to really claw back much ground in the saves category by going after Carlos Estevez. So it's all a long way of saying, let's pass on this Colorado situation.
Yeah, I think that's wise advice, which is almost evergreen, really. But they have had past relievers that are pretty interesting skills-wise end up in that role or near that role. Even Scott Oberg, when he was healthy, I thought was a good reliever in a bad situation. Unfortunately, he's not available and healthy right now. Otherwise, he'd be the kind of guy that I think I would be more inclined to take a chance on. And even if Estevez would be a good reliever elsewhere, doesn't help him as much in Colorado. So tread carefully if you are taking a shot in that Rockies bullpen. That is going to wrap things up for this episode of the Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Give us a follow on Twitter. He's at M. Beller. I'm at Derek Van Riper. As always, be sure to subscribe to The Athletic. If you don't have a subscription, for just $3.99 a month to start at theathletic.com/fantasybaseballpodcast. For Michael Beller, I'm Derek Van Riper. The Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast is back on Tuesday with Under the Radar.